In the new book, American Oasis, Finding the Future in the Cities of the Southwest, author Kyle Paletta takes readers on a journey through the rapidly evolving landscapes of the American Southwest. This exploration delves into the region's sprawling urban centers, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and beyond, where innovation, ambition, and resilience collide with the realities of climate change, economic disparity, and cultural transformation. Paletta weaves together storytelling and analysis, capturing the spirit of a region reinventing itself against the odds. Again, the name of the book is American Oasis, Finding the Future in the Cities of the Southwest. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Kyle Paletta to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joe.
What brought you to the subject?
Well, I grew up in New Mexico, so I have a natural interest in the Southwest. But really, I think part of it was living in the Northeast for the past almost two decades. I've been basically between New York and Boston since college, and realizing how little a lot of people up here know about the Southwest, or, you know, they have this kind of a handful of touch points, you know, maybe Georgia O'Keeffe or visiting the Grand Canyon. But someone who came from Albuquerque, you know, I think there's a real blindness to all of these big cities that are in the Southwest and, you know, remain some of the fastest growing cities in the nation, and a real kind of lack of attention to their history, how they became part of America, the issues that they're facing with climate change until, you know, in the past couple of years, there have been national headlines about a community outside of Phoenix running out of water, or, you know, these sort of natural disasters, or the sense of impending disaster that kind of draws people in. So I think the real impetus for the book was wanting to introduce a lot of people from outside the region to the Southwest, as well as to kind of uncover the history of these cities for people from there. Because as I, you know, discovered working on it, there's plenty about Albuquerque I didn't know until I started researching.
So let's just take Phoenix or even Albuquerque as an example. I mean, these are areas where the population has just exploded in recent decades. Give us a sense of why you believe that is the case, and by all accounts, why that will continue to be the case.
Well, it's really two stories. So I think the first story is one that starts after 1848 with, you know, the integration of the Southwest into America after the Mexican-American War. And so you have these kind of older cities that were settled by the Spanish, like Albuquerque, Tucson, El Paso, Santa Fe, and the railroad arriving, kind of industrial development, and this effort to really exploit the landscape. So there's this kind of first wave of settlement that happens, but then what happens at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th is a real explosion in, you know, what becomes Phoenix and what becomes Las Vegas of these unsettled parts of the Southwest. There's sort of a big split between what I think of as the old Southwest, where there was already this, you know, a long-term indigenous community, the Mexican community, and the Salt River Valley in Phoenix, where Anglo settlers could come and really make it their own. So you have all of these cities are around the same population until about World War II. And it's only after World War II that Phoenix way surpasses the rest of the region by kind of playing into this idea of you can live the American dream here. This is a blank space you can fill. You can, you know, live whatever life you want. And then, of course, Las Vegas kind of learns that lesson and takes it to the next level with this kind of fantasy of abandon, or, you know, it really kind of trades on the maybe some of the darker impulses of the American imagination to see the same kind of growth.
You focus basically on five southwestern cities: Phoenix, Tucson, Albuquerque, El Paso, and Las Vegas. You write in the book, the region already looks like what the rest of America is becoming. Every year, the United States is getting hotter, drier, more urban, and more diverse. So that idea of an American oasis, can that be sustained?
Yeah, I think that's sort of the question that I try to answer in the book is, you know, I think there's perhaps a misapprehension that, you know, these cities came out of nowhere and they're sort of inherently unsustainable, which I confront in the book with the idea that civilization as we know it was born in the desert. I mean, you think about Egypt, Mesopotamia, the first written languages, like there is something about extreme environments that force humans to come together and work communally, work towards, you know, taking care of each other, providing for each other. So I think that, you know, the idea of living in the desert is not unsustainable at all. The question is, can we have a city of 5 million people in the desert? And that I think we have really begun to test the limits of. And that's why you see all the water problems in Arizona now. And I think kind of the lesson that these cities can teach the rest of the country, in some ways, there's a counter lesson of, you know, understand what the natural limitations are and work within them. But there's also some real signs of hope. I mean, you look at Las Vegas, contrary to its reputation, is the most efficient water user in the country. I mean, they recycle 40% of all the water they pump out of Lake Mead. They lose very, very little water to, you know, leaks in the plumbing and these kind of things that are common elsewhere. And so as other parts of the country begin dealing with real water shortages, and this is already happening in, you know, Kansas and Missouri with overpumping aquifers, it's up here in Boston. The past couple months, we had a really bad drought where you had some small municipal reservoirs starting to really drop. Like, I think there are some lessons about, A, understanding the limits of the ecology you live in, and B, making big investments early so that when, you know, when the dry times come for you or come for your community, you're ready.
Kyle Paletta is the author of the new book, American Oasis, Finding the Future in the Cities of the Southwest. Talk a little bit about the equality of these regions, because you write, and it's fascinating. I didn't know much of this history, but when it comes to Hispanics and Native Americans and African Americans, this was a very difficult area where through the change and the transformation of these areas, these communities in many cases were just decimated.
Yeah, I mean, one of the kind of things that I grew up with in Albuquerque was this idea of the three cultures of New Mexico, that, you know, there's this kind of balance between Anglos, Hispanics, and Native Americans. And one of the things that I try to do in the book is really explore that idea and show how much more difficult and contested the state's history has been. And, you know, I talk through some of the real atrocities that the Spanish conquistadors inflicted on the Pueblos. I talk about, you know, once the Anglos came in, this real effort to kind of subjugate people of color. And, you know, Albuquerque, where I grew up, when I was in high school, we celebrated the 300th anniversary of the city because it was founded in 1706, 2006. It's a big civic party. In reality, Albuquerque spent more time as two cities than it did as one. What's now Albuquerque was actually founded in the 1880s, a mile east of the original Spanish settlement, and it grew up around the original Spanish settlement and then annexed it in the 1950s. So, like, even that, I think, gives you an idea of this kind of contest for control of these places. And, you know, I talk about some of the civil rights history and, you know, looking at a place like Las Vegas, where it's initially settled mostly by white families, but then with all the casinos, there's a real need for labor. And you have it becomes part of the second great migration of African Americans in the South moving west. And most of them, you know, end up in Los Angeles, but there's a significant population that ends up on the west side of Las Vegas and is living in just atrocious conditions. And so you have some civil rights leaders who, you know, fight back. And there's an amazing story I tell in the book about welfare mothers in the 1970s who actually marched down Las Vegas Boulevard, shut down the strip because their welfare rights, their welfare benefits were being cut. So another just kind of example of we today have these really amazing kind of multi-ethnic urban fabric in these cities, but it came about through a lot of struggle and a lot of strife. And in many ways, those problems continue. People are still struggling to see some return on the enormous growth and the enormous amount of wealth that has been created in these cities.
Again, the name of the book is American Oasis by Kyle Paoletta. I think as I was reading this book, the fires, of course, were overtaking Los Angeles. And it, this is almost a Dust Bowl in reverse. Now, while the Dust Bowl was to the east of many of the cities that you're writing about, it was the people in New Mexico and Colorado who were leaving those areas to go to the west. And as you said, in Los Angeles and other areas, and to hopefully find water, number one. And now with the fires in California, and specifically most recently in Los Angeles, people, and this has been happening for more than a decade, that so many people are leaving California to go to the cities that you do write about, and Phoenix and Las Vegas and Albuquerque. So what is it about that, of almost the reversal of fortune there, where people are trying to find something? Because, as you say, once again, water is going to be a problem in the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are aware of how dependent the region is on the Colorado River.
Right.
And that includes Southern California. I mean, the 40 million people who rely on that river, half of them live in Metro Los Angeles and San Diego. So I very much think of Southern California as sort of an extension of the Southwest. Obviously, it's a very different environment, but I think it has seen a lot of the similar kind of boom that the cities I focus on write about. And you're right. It is, when you talk about people leaving California, most of them are going to Arizona and Nevada. And so there is a interesting kind of flight that's happening. I would caution people from thinking of that they can escape climate change, though. I fear that people have, when we focus so much on these disasters, and the fires right now in Los Angeles are horrifying, but when we only think about these natural disasters, we lose sight of kind of the slower changes that are happening. And so you may run from the natural disaster to a place that doesn't have the resources to support a population. So I think, to me, the answer is, again, thinking about what are the limits? How do we live more efficiently? How do we live more sustainably? And I think that definitely has to do with using water more efficiently in all of these places. But it also has to do with acknowledging, you know, as the climate gets hotter and hotter, there's going to be more fires like this. And it's not anyone's fault for living in a house that may be kind of in the danger zone, but I think cities and states need to be building much more densely within city centers, need to be kind of avoiding putting people in harm's way, and kind of making these investments in that sense of community and coming together, rather than, you know, having your own little slice of the world that's up away from everyone else.
You make a couple of points in the book. One is, in talking about these areas that drought and heat are very big issues. And in about a 5-year period, 1,800 people just in Phoenix's Maricopa County were killed by the heat. And we can assume that that risk will rise as summer temperatures rise as well. When it comes to water, you do write rather, I think there's a positive story in what you write about is in Phoenix and Las Vegas of how they use their water resources, and there's some thought put into it. But then you do end with the question of, but as you continue growing the population, will that undo the progress that was made in those cities in particular?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's this idea of decoupling that climate scientists use, which is, you know, can you keep growing the population, growing the economy without using more resources? I think Las Vegas is maybe a great example of decoupling in action, where they've managed to double the population of Las Vegas without using any more water than they did in the 1990s. So that's a real success story. At the same time, it's, you know, these issues are so complicated on the ground. If you're in downtown Phoenix, you have a different water source than someone way out an hour away on the kind of like exurban fringe. And so I think part of what I'm calling for in the book is, you know, as we try to decouple, the only way to do that is to just be much more intentional about where we're building, where we're getting our water from. And I can't remember exactly the number that I cite in the book, but there's so much vacant land in Phoenix that if you built on it with, you know, the current density of the city, more than 100,000 people could live in there. And that's within the city limits. And that's water that is much more available than groundwater, like that is coming from reservoirs and is a little bit more predictable. So I think part of the argument is saying, like, let's look at what we already have. Let's make that better. Let's improve the lives of the people already, you know, in the core of these cities, rather than our idea of growth has to be, you know, infinite expansion to the horizon.
Let's just take Phoenix as an example, but oh my God, is it hot? I don't know. I don't know how you avoid talking about that.
I mean, I think it is one of those real cultural things where, I mean, even coming from New Mexico, like, we don't have 120 degree days in Albuquerque. Like, friends from Phoenix, I share the feeling of many people in the Northeast of, like, those numbers don't even make sense to me when I see them.
No, and I mean, I've never been to a city before in my life where there's a sign that says that the pool is closed because it will scald you. I mean, that's insane. But it is something that draws many people to its core and its environs.
It is. And, you know, I think that people are, you know, if you want to retire to a place where it almost never rains and, you know, as hot as it gets in the summer, if you visited Phoenix in January or February, there are few more enjoyable places in America to be in the winter. So I do understand the appeal. I think my focus when thinking about heat is, historically, we dealt with heat by basically using technology to avoid it. So, you know, we have air conditioning and, right, you know, you have your air conditioned home, you drive in your air conditioned car to your air conditioned office or go shopping at the air conditioned mall. That, to me, is a way of kind of insulating yourself from the place you live, which I think feeds into the other unsustainable practices I write about in the book. And I do wish that folks in Phoenix or Tucson or El Paso, you know, indulged in the heat a little bit more, really engaged with it and felt it, because unfortunately there are thousands of people who are homeless in Maricopa County. And you cited the 1,800 folks who lost their lives in recent years. Almost all of them were homeless. So that, to me, like, when I think about heat, I think about the people who are vulnerable. Those are people who need houses, need resources.
Right.
And I believe it's very within our power to shelter them and provide for them. It's just a question of how we're allocating our resources.
What is your, in the end of the book, and I don't want to give away the ending, but as far as your overall thoughts of what you make of the future of the Southwest?
I mean, I think, you know, it's not going to dry up and blow away. I think there is this kind of idea that people maybe have of, oh, these kind of unsustainable places, they won't survive. I don't think that's the case at all. I think really what I've observed is a pretty broad belief in the need to adapt and the need to, you know, these cities are investing billions of dollars in new water infrastructure and finding ways to reduce heat, even just, you know, planting trees and changing the asphalt on streets to bring down the heat island effect. So what I see is definitely a little grain of hope of just when you are confronted with extreme conditions, you have to respond. And I think right now the Southwest is responding, even talking about Los Angeles with these fires. Like, as bad as it is now, I've been heartened to see a lot of political leaders in California, including the governor, immediately saying, we are going to rebuild. Like, we're not going anywhere. You know, like, we're not going to run away from these places that we love and where people have lived for centuries. The question is, do we make the right choices when we rebuild or when we're trying to grow a city, do we do it in a way that we can sustain for the next 100 years? I think there are some signs for hope there. I think there's also plenty of people who want to just kind of keep doing things like they've been doing them. And so it's up to those of us who are really attending to these issues and their severity to keep pushing for some reforms. And I think that goes nationally as well. I mean, part of the premise of the book is these are the issues that everyone in America is going to face. I mean, we had, you know, wildfires in New Jersey and Massachusetts this fall. Like, we can't keep pretending that these issues only belong to the Southwest or only belong to California. The way the climate is changing, we all need to start thinking about the environment as a thing that isn't always there to help us. So how do we live with it more sustainably? How do we listen to the things that it's telling us about how we can survive the 21st century? I feel like the, you know, at the risk of sounding a little bit kooky, like, nature is talking. We need to be listening and attending to it.
Absolutely. The name of the book is American Oasis, Finding the Future in the Cities of the Southwest. Kyle Paletta is the author. It is published by Pantheon. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. This has been fun.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is American Oasis, Finding the Future in the Cities of the Southwest. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.